The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Okay, my own headphones are kind of loud.
Yeah, I'm a little loud.
We're all loud. Who's in here before? Deaf people?
Yeah.
What? You're supposed to say what? welcome to We the People. Another unceremonious beginning. We like our unceremonious beginnings. Actually, it's a good thing we like them because...
That's all we have.
It's our best material.
That's our hat trick.
It is. Oh, my gosh. Well, we have a really fun show today. And... We're not talking politics today, actually, because little does everyone know, actually a lot of people do know, but little does the general public know, yesterday was really Memorial Day.
Yep.
And so we planned this Memorial Day program with Ken Delfino a long time ago, and we put it on the weekend of Memorial Day, not realizing at the time
the real
that,
Memorial Day.
That the hot dog festival, the three-day hot dog festival was last week, so... This day we're celebrating Memorial Day, the real one. So we're talking about, oh my gosh, he's got a map. He's got a map and a book.
Oh, we're going on a journey.
Yeah, it's too bad. So if you hear like crinkling, we have a lot of paper in here. Apparently there's a map involved. This isn't good.
Where's the camera?
And it's of France, you know, so we're going to have a lot of tricky sounding names that Bill and I won't be pronouncing because obviously we don't know French. Need to get that Steve Martin clip on there, you know, the one, you know, he spoke French. He's going to die. So let's see. Let's tell you about Ken. He lives in Colfax. He's lived there since December 2001. He's a medically retired Navy veteran, 1964 to 1969. He served with the Amphibious Squadron 5. Okay, Ken, you've got to fill me in on this. There's all sorts of secret in the USS Seminole.
That was our ship.
Yeah, it was your ship.
It was our ship. It was a cargo attack, amphibious cargo ship.
Nice. You were a boat captain, river patrol force in the Mekong Delta, South Vietnam, from 1966 to 68. So I'm sure, you know, that wasn't exciting at all.
Those were during my communist downsizing days.
communist downsizing.
Maybe there's a little politics to be had here. And then you worked for United Airlines from 1969 to 2002. What'd you do with United anyway?
Other than getting yelled at a lot, my job was sales. I enjoyed the job. I worked in San Francisco in our Fisherman's Wharf office for 25 of my 32 years, and we transferred. We have a branch office in Suisun City, so my commute dropped from 49 miles to a mile and a half.
Nice.
It was pretty nice.
You commuted from Suisun to San Francisco like every...
Every 4 days. Well, I was on a 10-hour shift.
Brutal. Yucky. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to learn some things about Ken that I didn't know. He enjoys golf. I didn't know that. Is that true? Or are you lying?
Well, the relative enjoyment is irrelevant to the talent.
Okay.
So, I think that's the case in most people that pick up golf clubs.
Yeah, because it says here skill is not relative to enjoyment. And right. I'm like, is there a trick to this? Average 49er and hockey ice fan. Owns a trophy business. I did not know that. KMD Trophies and Awards. Really?
Yes.
Geez, that's handy. And his wife is Melba, and Melba's a past president of Kiwanis?
Yes, yes.
I am a past president of Kiwanis.
I'm a past member.
Bill, what have you done lately?
Yeah, well, I was a member of Kiwanis.
That's right, I used to rope you into that. That's pretty fun. Ken volunteers with the Placer County Sheriff's Department, and is involved with Junior Falcons football, and City Council. Forgot about that. 2008 to 2012, you were the mayor. You were the mayor, I think, when I met you.
In 2010. Yes. 10-11. Or 11-12. Yeah, 10-11.
And now you're let's see, reelected in 2014 to 2018.
I have nothing else to do.
I don't believe that.
Retire and then work twice as hard. Well, good for you. Well, thank you for your service, and thank you for representing our veterans, and especially on this whole Normandy and D-Day information. You guys have a great program. We have listed it for you guys out on the radio. We have listed it on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Today is a day whether you do it right this minute or you do it later on. But this is a time when you definitely want to check out the website. There is an amazing video. We'll be playing the music. When you hear kind of a, oh, it's probably 5 or 6 minutes, it's a really nice, what is it called again, Ken?
John Williams' piece. It's Hymn for the Fallen.
Hymn for the Fallen. I always want to say Tribute to the Fallen. Hymn for the Fallen, and it's really, really beautiful. And then there are quite a few pictures on the website of Ken's travels over there and the program that he is involved in. That is called, if my website would come up quickly, what do you guys call it?
Honor Their Memory.
Honor Their Memory. And you invented that. I think I called you the originator, but bottom line is you invented it back in 1995.
Well, how that happened is...
Yeah, I was going to say, tell us why.
I first became aware of the American Battle Monument Commission's function in June of 93 when I visited Paris, France for my first time. And across the Seine River is a town of Suresnes, which is more advanced, it's more modern than Paris is. But at the top of Mont Valérien, in that town, is a World War I American military cemetery. 1,500 men are buried there, and some names of some missing. I got my first experience with one of those cemeteries. And I'd always, when I was in high school, I loved history, and I knew about Normandy. I'd always wanted to visit one of those, but at that time in my life, I was really kind of an isolationist. You know, nobody liked us, so I didn't like anybody else.
Well, you got such reception when you came back, so I can't imagine how that would have...
Well, in this particular case, my Kiwanis responsibilities required that I attend a convention in Nice, France. So our visit was to Suresnes, and I was impressed. This was on June 30th of 93. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was impressed at how clean the cemetery grounds were, how clean the markers were. There were hardly any leaves on the ground. You know, just, the lawn was just beautifully green. The blacks... the fencing and the gilt on the top of the fence, just absolutely sparkling. And these superintendents, they take great care in what they do. We have, I think, 26 cemeteries in countries Western Europe, Italy, North Africa, and the Philippines that they are responsible for, as well as 26 or 27 individual markers that are some are put up by the host country and others are put up by the government. So I... in 1994, I was asked by our Kiwanis governor, Ted Gibbs, to serve as his international relations chairman. So I was trying to figure out what to do. I had no project in mind on an international race, but we were coming up on the 50th anniversary of D-Day. I came home one night, and I turned on the TV, and all I saw was a white screen and no sound. So I couldn't figure out what's the matter with the television. So you turn on your little clicker,
sure,
and the volume keeps going, the bar goes keep going right and right, and there's still no sound other than hum. So what's the matter? I changed channels, and I found out there was nothing wrong with the volume. So I went back, and then about that time, all of a sudden, the camera moved back from what was a close-up of a white marker.
Then it
moved back, and you start seeing the green grass, then the red, white, and blue of the French and U.S. flags, and then... It was on a cherry picker, and as it came up, then you start to see the beginning of over 9,300 graves, and Tom Brokaw was doing his live broadcast from Normandy on the 50th anniversary of D-Day, and that got me.
Mm. Yeah,
that really got me. Yeah, and so I was impressed. I listened. I watched the whole ceremony. It was done very well, and so that my goal was to, for the next year, to get all the Kiwanis clubs in our district. I think about 600 Kiwanis clubs at the time in our district. Get every Kiwanis club to donate those graveside flags to decorate the graves on the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe. That was my original goal. I wasn't getting a really fast reaction to that, and I'm kind of impatient at times. But another idea came up that we could donate flags to the cemeteries, and that we did. We got our Kiwanis Club started donating flags to the cemeteries that they could use in their place, and that went real well. And I made my first visit to one of the cemeteries in Ardennes in September of 1994, where I met Hans Hooker, who was the superintendent there, and he showed us around, which was really great, and then Normandy the next day.
Now, are these cemeteries, I watched the video, and just be forewarned, if you watch that video, keep a hanky close by.
It's a Kleenex video.
Yeah, it's definitely a Kleenex video. But are the graves at those sites all American graves?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
The cemeteries are maintained by an American superintendent who has either usually a counterpart of the host nation. They work side by side, and then all the groundskeepers are of the host nation. And then there's other staff. Normandy has, I think, the largest staff. The last time I was there last year, I noticed a very large staff that they had that I had not seen before. The very first time I went there, there was my good friend Lee Atkinson was the assistant. I think that was the second day on the job, which was kind of neat. And then Phil Rivers was the superintendent. And then they had two ladies there who are, I think, still there working. And then George, the groundskeeper. So it was a very small staff in 94 at my first visit. Now it's like quadruple the size of staff.
Do you have... I watched the video. Do you have the numbers, just to give people an idea how big these cemeteries are, the numbers of soldiers that are buried?
I don't have the exact numbers, but the largest one is the in Europe is the Meuse-Argonne, which I believe has over 14,000 men buried there, and that's in the Argonne Forest. It's a World War I cemetery. As a matter of fact, there's a road that goes right through the middle of the cemetery to another town. That's there, which is right next door. The largest World War II cemetery over there is the one at Lorraine, which is in the eastern part, in the town outside the town of Metz, which is the eastern part of France. It's on off the major highway between Paris and Germany. And then the largest one with number of bodies is in the Philippines. I believe they have around 17,000. But the most impressive is they have over 35,000 names on the wall of the missing, and these are from all the sailors, mostly sailors and aviators that we lost during World War II and all the sea battles.
Right, that weren't recovered.
Right.
Yeah. It when you watch the video, they give. I mean, it's great photography of the cemeteries. It gives you the name of the cemetery and the number buried there. And as it rolls through, it's unbelievable. The condition of the cemeteries, which you were talking about earlier,
perfect.
Every blade of grass, and it amazes me that to this day they take such pride in caring for those grounds.
When I first met Lee, he told me once. He said, second time or third time I went there, said any time you hear a superintendent say my cemetery is looking pretty good, it's time for them to leave, because those guys are never satisfied with
it. Shows.
I mean, they really they want to know what took place in every inch of the ground of the cemetery. And I'll relate a story in point. Lee was walking us around at Normandy, and he's telling a story about he was getting ready to close, and with the World War II vets come up, they take total precedence over anybody else that's there.
Stop the presses.
These guys have precedence,
sure,
and they're given the royal treatment. But he's walking with this one guy. He said, "I can get a golf cart. You want to take the golf cart?" And he said, "Oh, no." He said, "I walk back then. I'll walk there now." You know. So he goes back, yeah, and they're walking along the seawall, and he stopped. And he says, "That's where I came, right up that draw." And Lee says, "Well, I was, being real proud of that he knows his cemetery grounds. Except for Captain Joe Dawson's engineers came up there." The guy looked at him. Lee said, the guy looked at me like I knew that. I was right behind him. So he gets a lot of these reactions.
They actually know what happened on the ground because they were actually there.
Right.
All right, we need to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People. I know, Ken's like, already? I told you, I warned you, it's going to go fast. Find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. There's a ton of information. And we have some special sponsors for today's show. We're going to be putting them in and got some great information for you. Stay tuned with us. What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460, KCNR.
This is Brian Cunat calling from beautiful Napa County, where the Matera Cunat Family Vineyards is producing some excellent wines. I am proud to be part of the show today and represent Ken Delfino, We actually named our brand new tasting room after Ken Delfino for his patriotic service to our country, his caring for the others that have served before him. We actually have specials all the time for any vets that would like to come and visit our tasting room at Big Ranch Road and Oak Knoll Avenue in beautiful downtown Napa. So we look forward to seeing you, and congratulations, Ken. We think the world of you.
Thank you, Brian. That is awesome. Ken's mouth is hanging open. Oh, did we lose him?
Well, I decided to give him an extra minute or two to talk. He's a big talker, so we'll let him go. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Matera Vineyards, good for you guys. Support our veterans. Support our Ken Delfino. He's famous. And for those of you that are listening live here, don't forget you can always call us 530-605-4567 here at KCNR. Thanks, Matera, for doing that segment of the program. Bob, do we have another ad to run, or do we run our music? This is new. We've not done these commercials. This is like old-time radio. You know, we need, like, we don't have any soap people. If we had some soap people, that would be better, you know?
Yeah, we need
scrub it up
of,
with so-and-so.
A banjo and a harmonica. And
so we have
we
have the namesake of the tasting room at Matera Vineyard. That's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
For all you wine drinkers out there. We're back. You're joining We the People. Keep up with us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got video. We've got photos. We have a wonderful photo array there that Ken Delfino provided for us today. We're talking about Normandy and the project Honor Their Memory. Okay, Ken, quit writing. Swivel the microphone back around. We're on. We're on, bud.
Okay.
Okay. So, what's our next story, or our next stop, I guess, along the journey?
Well, actually, there's a couple of things about Normandy. They have 33 sets of brothers buried there.
Oh, wow.
Two of the most notable brothers you've heard of them in one way or another. The Nylands, Lieutenant Preston and Sergeant Robert Nyland, are buried side by side, and these were the two of the brothers that were portrayed in the movie Saving Private Ryan. There was a third brother who was captured in the South Pacific. He was on a B-25 crew, and then they were looking for the fourth one, Fritz, who based on what I've read about him, I don't know if he was at that battle in the last scene in Saving Private Ryan. But it was a good story, but it's based on a true story. Colonel Ollie Reed was killed on July 30th of 1944 in the Brittany area of Normandy. And his son, First Lieutenant Ollie Reed Jr., was killed in Italy on July 4th of 1944.
Wow.
They're both buried side by side, and I had heard that the wife had received telegrams on the same day, which had to be pretty heartbreaking. On the Wall of the Missing, there are over 1,500 names on the Wall of the Missing. There's 22 of them are the names of men from Bedford, Virginia. They died on 33 or 34 hit the beaches on Normandy. They were from the small town, a farming community, 3,000 people. And they hit the beaches. 19 of them were killed on the beach. Three more were killed later during the campaign. And because Bedford had the highest per capita casualty rate of any city in the United States, that is why the D-Day Memorial, the National D-Day Memorial, is there, and it's magnificent. I believe you posted a link on there, and
yes,
they can always use donations to help keep operating. That project was started by Sergeant Bob Slaughter, who was also with the 29th Infantry Division, wanted to do something in memory of the men from Virginia. Another, on a side note, 29th, another man locally, Reading, who was with the 29th Infantry, was Leo Simon. And I was given the honor of having a flag flown over the Normandy Cemetery for him several years ago. This was done in conjunction with Special Forces Chapter 89 here in Reading. And so we honored him with a flag that had flown over his buddy's graves, as well as some sand from Omaha Beach. Another big significance, and my grandson picked this up when we were there last summer, he came up to me and he says, "How come there's so many men with the number 66th Division on there?" Well, these were soldiers of the 63 regiments of the 66th Infantry Division. They were on the SS Leopoldville, which is a Belgian ship, and they were being shuttled from England to Cherbourg because they were going to be released for the Battle of the Bulge, and they were torpedoed 5 miles from shore. And because they're all geared down with heavy coats and all their equipment and stuff, most of them drowned. And so they lost over 700 men from that division on that ship.
That would explain.
Yeah, the names on 66. But I was really pleased that he noticed that he really took particular notice of that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You might just walk through there and not even see it.
Right.
So how many, when you go over there, you've been there how many times?
For several years. And I'm not a, just let the public know, I'm not a rich person. I happen to work for United Airlines. I have pass benefits, which really made it really, and being a Kiwanian, that all tied in together. So I was able to get on passes, and get on flights over there. Normandy's only a three-hour drive when you get to the Orne River. Near the city of the town of Caen, I forget which one's which. It's C-A-E-N. It's about 3 hours to there, and then another half an hour, 45 minutes to the actual areas that we liberated. When you get to the Orne River, make a right turn and head towards the ocean or the channel, you'll come to the town, the small village of Benneville. Benneville was a target of the British Airborne 6th Airborne Division, and their job was to hold two of those bridges because there were German Panzer units to the north that had to be kept out to keep the landing beaches free, and their orders were to hold until relieved. Well, your folks will see on a website the bridge and the memorial there that the French have put there with all the flags of all the Allies, and there are some markers there, and that's where these gliders landed at 12:15 in the morning. Now, on a glider, you don't have a go-around. It's one shot in your
head,
right?
Yeah, you land or else.
The first one landed about 30 yards from the bridge.
Okay.
The second one landed behind them, and the third one landed between the two. And there was only one one killed in action. That was Lieutenant Den Brothridge, who was killed in the battle on the bridge itself. They captured, they caught the Germans totally by surprise. Then they captured the Gondre Café liberated the first building liberated, first family, the Gondre family, and the daughter, who was like 2 or 3 years old at the time, Arlette, she runs the café now. At this time, it's the unofficial headquarters of the British 6th Airborne Division.
No kidding.
Yep. You'll see them every once in a while. They're maroon berets and stuff. Really kind of neat.
So when you're back there, how many do you run into a lot of Americans at these locations?
Yes, there's a lot of tour buses, but I've thanks to Lee and some of these other superintendents, I've been to these different areas. They pointed out places to us where the tour buses don't go.
Nice.
And so that's really kind of neat. I'll get to some of those places later on. On your way from the Normandy Cemetery towards the town of St. Mary Glees, which our paratroopers liberated, is about 2 miles away, is a German cemetery. It's in the little village of Lacombe, and there are 22,220 some odd Germans buried there. And a lot of Germans, from what I heard, were buried there because they could not be repatriated back to the East Germany. The Russians didn't want them in East Germany. So they said, "No, you keep them. We don't want them." Then over the years, several years ago, German students have come over. They take care of the graves during the summer. And they also have planted a tree for every German soldier buried there. So it's a beautiful setting that you can see. And you see the contrast between the Allied graves and the German graves. Ours are all white, either markers or crosses and Stars of David. And when you look at the German cemetery there, it's very bleak for some reason, dark and bleak. Fortunately for us, for our troops, Captain Michael Wittmann is buried there. He was a German tank commander who was a very good tank commander. He was battle-hardened. He had fought in the Eastern Front against the Russians, extremely successful, and he was killed on August. He was back there, and, of course, none of the Germans moved without Hitler's orders because he didn't want to be wakened because this whole thing was going on, right? Fortunately for us, because I think if Wittmann had turned all his tanks loose, there might have been some serious problems. And also, I don't know how the British would have done against the Germans from the other direction, but we had no tanks to fight back at that time until later on in the day.
Oh, so we kind of lucked out.
Yeah, we did.
Good thing the guy had everybody scared.
And the other thing, too, about the leadership that day, a lot of officers were killed on the first waves.
Right.
He had got it down to sergeants, corporals who were taking command and just starting to do things because things needed to be done.
Sure.
And a lot of times when I'm talking to students, to athletes and stuff like that, I tell them, look, somebody's got to take charge. It doesn't look like anybody's taking charge on a court or on a field. You take charge. Somebody's got to lead and others will follow. And that's what happened in Normandy.
Interesting. Yeah, you don't think about that.
Yeah.
That's true. They'd wind up leaderless and they couldn't just all sit there and wait for somebody to come boss them around.
A lot of heroism that day.
Oh, boy. Somebody had to jump up and go first. And
right.
Bodies falling all around you. That's an incredible scene. If you've never seen the movie, it's frightening.
Well, the other thing, too, is it's a tremendous sign of their training.
Yes.
That they were able to do that, because then you don't have a lot of time to sit around and figure out, you know, there's not a lot of planning that goes on. You just start moving.
Right.
I'm just so impressed, always have been impressed. Every time you see pictures, I've never been to these sites. So impressed at how they take care of our fallen.
Yes.
Because they're so grateful for the service that they gave. And I think sometimes we forget that.
Well, it's not just our people who take care of them. It's a lot of the locals.
That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I mean. In this particular case, you know, the French are incredibly respectful. And in many of these places, you had made notes that the American flag flies there, not just at the cemetery, but in other places in the towns every day.
Right. Exactly. It's really kind of neat. There is one cemetery there from the very beginning, the one in the Netherlands, in the town of Margraten, a little town of 400 people. But we have 8,300 graves there. The last one being placed there in 1994. I think the second lieutenant Utrecht was found by a Dutch farmer who was taking down some trees because he wanted to expand his field, and he found a soldier buried there. He had his dog tags, and so they buried him there at Margraten. But there's two nurses there. There's a General Maurice Rose is there. He was the one whose tanks. One of the tank divisions that helped free the battle, loosen up the Battle of the Bulge. He went into Bastogne. There's also, at Margraten, every single grave has been adopted by a Dutch family as their own son or daughter. And they come out and decorate on the birthday, on the anniversary of the death, wow. Memorial Day, Veterans Day, Armistice Day to them. And the rule is that only one family can have a grave. And they're going now into their third generation. No one's given up their soldier.
Oh, no kidding.
I was going to ask that question, Ken. This happened, over 70 years ago. Obviously, we're looking at probably at least second or third generation of folks that are taking care of these. And there's still that sense of...
That's part of their family.
Yes.
Almost heritage that they will continue to carry on their duty.
Well, it's passed on. The parents and grandparents make darn sure that their kids and grandkids know what sacrifice was made there, both on this on the Allied parts and also on their own families.
Wow.
There was one passage I want to read from this one book. Where to put the book? There's a book out called My Longest Night by a French lady, Geneviève Dubuc.
Oh, I'm reading that right now.
I first met her on my first trip to Normandy when Lee and I turned. He invited me to retreat the colors that day. He said, "You're in luck. Geneviève is here today." And so I saw at the base of one of the flagpoles a lady in a white dress suit standing very, very at attention. Got closer. She's wearing what looks like a hairpin dust, but it's lavender. It's kind of maroon, mm-hmm. And it's the Legion of Honor. She'd been awarded the Legion of Honor by the French. She was 10, 11 years old when our troops landed on D-Day. We had seven or eight paratroopers landed on her farm. So they hit them. They housed them and hit them, fed them for until they had the breakout.
And these were wounded soldiers
wounded and lost. Yeah,
right.
Then eventually they took in some Germans also. So you had American and German at the same ranch.
Yeah.
And there was just an unspoken rule.
It was like the free zone. It was like Switzerland.
Yeah.
Their own private Switzerland.
But there was one phrase in here on July 11th. Her mom said, there's something you have to see. She has to see. So she goes outside, and she looks over, and she says, without a word, Papa handed me the binoculars and led me outside where he pointed in the direction of Amfreville, which is one of the villages down there we visited. So all of a sudden I realized we were outside the house, standing right on the tracks in direct line with the chateau, and not a trace of a bullet. Silence. I adjusted the binoculars ever so slightly, and then I saw, oh, what I saw, the American flag flapping in the breeze, flying proudly over the chateau. It looked so beautiful. All those stars and stripes that I recognized right away. One day in class, Mademoiselle Bourneuf had drawn it in for us on a blackboard using only colored chalk available. He then had us draw it for ourselves at our desks. Never heard we worked so hard to draw a flag. We wanted to get every detail absolutely right, for it was, we know, the symbol of freedom.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to make us cry.
Well, it was...
That is awesome.
The one part early in the book when she talks about how much they were looking forward to the day when they were going to get their freedom back.
Right.
And they were waiting for the Allies to come. And they waited and waited, and they were so poor, and they just knew they were coming. And when they came, they go into the feelings and the joy and the heartache. And I mean, it's an incredible story. But
kind of flies in the face of what we're hearing these days,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we're the bad guys and that we just ran around the world making a mess.
But
thanks so much for that idea.
You go in those villagers, they say, forget what they say in the cities.
Yep.
It's just like rural America.
Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, where the regular people live.
Right.
So out here where the regular people live, we need to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People Radio. Stick with us and join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And if you have friends and family who have missed this program, the archive will be up this afternoon.
Well, if you ask me where I come from, here's what I tell everyone. I was born by God's dear grace in an extraordinary place, where the stars and stripes and the eagle fly.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Here comes Pete. He flipped my microphone just in time. Pete Horton from Kiwanis Kalaniva Foundation. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Aaron. Pediatric trauma or unintentional injury is the number one killer of children age 14 and under in America. Each year, 9,000 families in the U.S. lose a child because of an injury. And sadly, studies indicate 90% of these injuries can be prevented. For this reason, the Kiwanis Kalaniva Foundation and the Kiwanis Clubs of California, Nevada, and Hawaii adopted pediatric trauma as their major focus. To learn how to protect our kids, please visit www.cnhfoundation.org.
Thanks, Pete. We totally support the mission of Kiwanis, and that's what has brought us our guest today.
Great. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you very much. If you guys want to, if anybody has anything to add or call in today, the number is 530-605-4567. You're listening to We the People.
I hear people talking bad about the way they have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. They're walking on the fighting side of me. let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down a country horse, you walk in on the fighting side of me.
Welcome back to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We are here with all-around good guy, amazing Vietnam veteran, Kiwanis past president, and founder of the
Honor Their Memory.
Honor Their Memory. A great program. We're talking about Normandy today.
Yeah, yeah. Ken, you
and
were talking about...
celebrating Real Memorial Day.
Yeah. You were talking about the book My Longest Night, and...
Yes.
The main character and author of that, Genevieve, was 11 years old when the paratroopers came in on D-Day. It was the night before they actually landed, wasn't it?
The paratroopers came in like at 3 or 4 in the morning. Ours did around 2 or 3 in the morning. The British landed first at the other end. But they were so scattered all over.
Right, and then they landed in fields that the Germans had flooded.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of them landed in shallow water, but a lot of them landed in water that was over six feet deep and loaded down with all the gear. They didn't have a chance, and they drowned on the spot.
Exactly.
And her family, or her dad in particular, rode out and started collecting these guys. And at 11 years old, she had the presence of mind to throw a bunch of wood in her fire, because it was pitch black, and she threw a bunch of wood in her fireplace and basically got a chimney fire going where these guys could see the light from that fire.
And nowhere to go
to get on shallow ground and get out of the water. And at 11 years old, how many kids today would have that presence of mind? It was amazing.
Well, one of the characters that I met in the village of St. Mary Glees, I think it was on my second trip that Redding's John Kleckner, a lot of people know him here in the veteran community. He asked me on behalf of his group, which was vets at the time, to deliver 5 flags to the city of St. Mary Glees. Our flag flies here in 4 places every day in town, then once out at the Lafayette Bridge. I'll cover that bridge in a second. So I brought them, but I let we had met previous on a previous trip. We had met Phil Jutra, who was a who came into the village on the 14th of June. He was a warrant officer. His job was to send out replacement troops and equipment to where they needed to go. Phil's a heck of a he was a character, real character. He was from Massachusetts after the war. Well, he became very good friends with the Castell family there in a shop. Right on the corner of the main intersection. Those who may have watched the movie The Longest Day may have remembered seeing a paratrooper hung up on a church, which he did, which was a true story. And to this day, that paratrooper is up there in effigy, hung up on the church spire. But at the corner is E. Castell, which was a material shop with clothing. And Phil got to know that couple very well. Phil was of Norman descent as well, and he spoke fluent French, which is why they put him in that position. Well, after the war, he went back, ran for politics, was state assembly and state senate. And somewhere along the line, Antoinette's husband, Emil, passed away. And they had become friends. Phil had been going back there every 5 years or so just for reunions. And they were attracted to each other. They got married, and Phil stayed. Well, all of a sudden, the locals saying, there's an American from the war here living in our town. Well, villagers started bringing in stuff they had on their farms all these years, weapons, German and American weapons, uniform pieces, stuff, that they found on, because the whole area was a battlefield.
Sure.
So they brought it all there, and Phil never turned anything down. And so he built this building across the square, and he put all that stuff in there and moved forward a couple of years. One of the generals of one of the airborne divisions said, I can get you a glider. Could you use one of those for your museum? Phil never turned anything down.
So Did he have room for a glider?
He made room for a glider.
Okay.
So he has a glider, and when you go through the museum, you have to go through the glider to get to the other part of the museum.
Okay.
Okay.
I was like, how big is this building?
Okay. Well, and then the next year or 2 years later, the general from the other division, where'd you get that? He said, well, so-and-so from either the 82nd or 101st. I don't remember the sequence. Maybe if one of my guys in Europe are listening, they can let me know which division it was. They said, well, so-and-so, General so-and-so got it for me. He said, well, can you use a C-47? And Phil says, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, Phil's going to have to go through some kind of a self-help program.
Well, so so they're in the town. The first time I visit the museum, the plane is in a building, a glass building with the roof looks like a parachute. It's white, looks like a parachute. Well, what happened is I'm looking at that thing, and I'm looking at the building, seeing all these original stone buildings from when the village was built in the 1700s or 1600s. I said, how'd you get this airplane in here? He said, well, they flew it to Cherbourg from England, dismantled it, helicoptered it in, and put it back together and put the building over it. So
wow.
That's how,
wow.
That's how creative he is. And he was just really creative. Well, unfortunately, he fell down the stairs and he passed away several years ago. And on a subsequent trip, one of your former co-workers, Aaron, Lisa Mara.
I was going to say, no pun intended, right?
I wanted to get to the cemetery to decorate his grave. It looked like it was chained, so Lisa said, no problem. She jumps over the fence into a cemetery in a little village in France and says, no problem. She opens up the gate, and we find his grave. That's not the lot you're going to hear about Lisa. But she's
got to watch her every minute.
Yeah, we decorated the grave. That was pretty neat.
Well, you know, something that speaking of the old buildings, when you really look at the number of battles and actually the wars that they fought over there in a lot of those countries, to me it's amazing that there are any old buildings left.
Yeah, that's true.
You travel around, you see these buildings that were built in the 1600s and, mm-hmm. and so forth, and they're still there.
Yes.
After all of this, and it just kind of makes me wonder, did they intentionally not destroy those buildings? I mean, how could they have survived the intensity of some of those battles?
Well, I know there's the bridge in Italy that I can't think of the name of it. It's real famous. It has all the shops on it that hang out over the river. And they made a deal during the war. Okay, the bridge is off limits. Nobody bombs the bridge. It was a deal that they made, because nobody could get anywhere if they bombed the bridge.
Right.
So I wonder if maybe there was a little of that, or they just got lucky.
Well, I don't know, but I have a friend in Venice who might be listening to this, and maybe he can send something in a chat room about this.
Yeah.
Well,
there's a lot of churches.
In Florence.
I know a lot of the churches were spared, and when you look at some of the churches over there, mm-hmm. The architecture, and I mean, these are churches built in the 1500s, 1600s.
Right.
And they're still there.
Well, there's one story about a church in a Belgian town. I was on a Kiwanis project, and my counterpart took us out to dinner. And when we went back outside, I noticed that all the buildings looked older, but the church looked brand new. So I asked him, I says, what was this place before? It was a church. And he said that after that part of Belgium was liberated and our allies were across the Rhine River, a lot of our pilots, our bomber pilots and crews, had already had their 25 missions and had gone home. But what happened on this is they had new crews on this mission, and they were flying over, and they saw this river, and they thought they got to their target sooner than they expected. And so they released their bombs and dropped them on a town that had already been liberated and destroyed the church.
Oh.
Well, what happened is that they found about it when they got back to base. And a couple years after the war, those bomber crews came back and rebuilt the church.
No kidding.
Yeah. That's not the only place it's happened. I have another story about that as well, that in the village of Bello.
We were very gentlemanly back in the day.
Well,
you know, we kind of had, you know, rules. You know, really, everybody observed, sort of, like, we're at war, but let's not be nasty about it.
Well, you're right in that sense, Aaron, in that I also heard that Hitler apparently had an order that no battles were to be fought around cemeteries, Allied or German, because he had a great respect for the soldiers that were killed in battle. So he did not want any battles fought around cemeteries.
Wow. So military cemeteries. So if you're ever playing a board game and you need to come up with one nice thing about Hitler, you've got it.
That's it.
That's a toughie. That could be a winner there. Interesting, though. I mean, that doesn't hold today. You know, now we're fighting in a place where they strap bombs to children mm-hmm. and, you know, hide their armaments and their munitions in schools and hospitals so that those places get bombed. I mean, it's just...
Right.
It's very hard to wrap your mind around. Maybe war was simpler back then. And we fought to win.
That's right.
Which was another big distinction.
Well, the other thing I was going to bring up on St. Mary Glees, when we met to meet these people to deliver the flags, you don't just walk in and drop them off at City Hall. They have to have an official function.
Oh.
So the mayor,
it's a big deal.
The mayor's there, the ribbons, you know, and they wear the red, white, blue ribbon. The council members were there and stuff, and there was this one guy in line, a little short fellow, and I was asking everybody, you know, what they do if they were during the war, and this one gentleman, he's the shortest guy in the group, and his chest puffed out, and he says in French to Phil, he says, "I blew up three telephone poles." He was 12 years old. That was his job, to blow up three telephone poles and disrupt the German communication system.
And he was damn proud of it.
He was.
Yeah.
You saw that immediately.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, we've read about all these things, but obviously going there is 1,000,000% better, and especially since a lot of these people are still alive.
Yes, and to meet them.
Yeah.
And tell their stories. I mean, they're just, I'll tell you what, the Belgians and the Dutch, if everybody had their sense of humor and got along the way those two nations do, the world wouldn't have any problems. I mean, there's just, you know, you go to both countries and you don't know where you left one and gone into the other. Both great senses of humor. Yeah, you know, great people, fun-loving folks, etc.
And that's something you don't always hear, but you have to get out of the city.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. That's right.
It always ends with that, doesn't it? And you have to get out of the city. We need to take one last quick break here. I know before the top of the hour, I know your hour's, this 1 hour is almost up. Imagine that. You are listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online at some point, wethepeopleradio.us. We have a ton of information on there and some fabulous pictures.
Red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
You're listening to We the People Radio on AM 1460 KCNR.
Welcome back. You are listening to We the People. We have some special sponsors today, and they're doing live commercials for you. Kind of fun. A little bit like old-time radio. But we're using the telephone, so I guess it's not that old-time. Our first person we have with us is Joseph Rice. He is with Oath Keepers. Hi, Joseph.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Fire away. What do you have to tell us about Oath Keepers? Of Josephine County, I should say.
Yeah, Oath Keepers, we're a national group of former military and law enforcement, or current, and we support our constitutional oaths that we always uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, and we will not violate the 10 amendments of the Constitution. We'll stand and protect those rights of all our citizens as a constitutional republic. We defend the individual right, which protects all of our rights. And that was recently demonstrated with the Sugar Pine Mine in Grants Pass, Oregon, where the Oath Keepers stood against the BLM, denying the miners their constitutional right to due process. And they were successful in forcing the BLM to go to a courtroom, and they're awaiting the decision so that miners have their day in court. But it's important to become involved in our community and protect those rights, as we've seen the erosion of them over the last decade or so.
That's
right. If anybody's interested, they could go to oathkeepers.com, find more about us nationally, and join your local chapter. We're in all 50 states.
Fabulous. Thank you. And we have a link to your website on ours. So the Josephine County, wonderful, Oregon Oath Keepers is on there linked.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. We'll hear from you next hour. Our next support personnel here is Mark Baird with the State of Jefferson. I guess we're all in the State of Jefferson, but you can speak for the State of Jefferson. How's that, Mark?
Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate that. I just want to tell a very quick story before I get to my point. I had a flight from Afghanistan, and as was so often the case, we had remains in the cargo compartment of the airplane. And each set of fallen soldiers' remains has a courier with it. And I remember we got to Air Force Base on the East Coast, and there were four or five guys that came up to the cargo deck, and they had a very small ceremony, and then they unloaded the remains of the fallen soldiers and took them to wherever they were going to go. And the courier that had been on top with one of these guys. He was with his buddy when he died, and he had bandages on his head, and his arm was in a sling. And he gets off the airplane, and he took his rifle bag and his rucksack, and he walks off down the ramp alone. No big parade, no crowd, no cheering throng, not even one single person to shake his hand, except the crew of the airplane. We did as he got off the airplane. But it just reminds me that liberty does have a price, and it's eternal vigilance. And I know that that gentleman can answer every second what he does to preserve liberty for his children and the rest of us. But can we all say the same thing? 2 o'clock on Tuesday, there is a board meeting in the Plymouth County Supervisor's office at 2 o'clock. And at that point, some outfit called Keep It California is going to give the Plymouth Board of Supervisors a presentation as to why they should do nothing instead of something in California. And I would just like to ask anyone that can, and if you can't, you can't, but if you can, be at that meeting and express to the supervisors how you think liberty is going in California and how you'd like to see them do something by supporting a Jefferson Declaration, which may at the very least restore representation in Northern California. It may or may not result in a new state. I hope it does. We don't know. But at the very least, the idea of representation will be discussed at the state level, and we could very well end up with more than we have now for rural counties. SOJ51.net, and thank you for having me on, and you have a great day today.
Thank you for your service, then and now. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Stay tuned for the second hour of We the People Radio. We have a lot more. Poor Mr. Delfino has books and papers, and we're going to put it all in the second hour. So if you're listening in Philly, join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People Radio. You are joining us in the second hour today. And if you missed the first one, or you happen to be in Philadelphia and we sent you the second hour on a different week, we are here with Ken Delfino. He is an all-around good guy, Vietnam veteran. He's in city council in Colfax, owns a trophy shop, likes to golf, but I guess he's not good at it because he said it's the skill is relative to enjoyment, is not relative to the enjoyment. Worked for United Airlines for a long time. So he is doing a project through Kiwanis.
Called Honor Their Memory.
And they fly flags over this. Is it all the cemeteries? Okay, so now we have to bring in Ken. Cue Ken.
You want this in English?
Hi. All right,
yeah,
that's
it's
right,
all,
that's
the, it's all the cemeteries in
you fly the flags over all the cemeteries, correct?
We have, what we do is people, say my dad served over there, or you know, an uncle, and I try to recognize as many as possible. And so we find out where they were. I just need some basic information, branch of service, and the unit. And then I can just do a lot of research and find out where they were, where their buddies might have been buried. And then I try to get flags flown over those cemeteries because it has more meaning to them because their buddies are buried there. And all these superintendents from day one have been just extremely supportive of this project.
The superintendents of the
cemeteries.
Yeah.
Whatever you can do. I mean, these guys, they know the project. It's been going on 20 years now. Hard to believe it's that long already.
How many flags do you think you've cycled through the program up to date? Any ideas?
The superintendents have flown over 400 for me over the last 20 years.
Wow.
Not fooling.
Well, mostly World War II vets, but got some Korean War veterans in there, some Vietnam veterans as well. And, you know, if somebody wants to surprise somebody on Father's Day or Memorial Day or, you know, Armistice Day, I'm glad to do it, but I just need time because of the turnaround time.
How much time? I mean, if I wanted to do something like that, give you a year?
No, not that long. At least 2 months. And the reason
he's not the government, and he doesn't need a full year.
Oh. Well, yeah. The reason being is because on one of the shipments that I sent over, it sat in a sorting place in San Juan, Puerto Rico for like 10 days. And you have all the security stuff you have to worry about,
right.
Stuff going to an embassy, because he's the cheapest way to do it is send it, priority mail to the embassy addresses. But then you can send it faster, but it's more expensive to send it directly to the post office, because what we do is we pay the return post as well, because we want this as a no-cost item to the American Battle Monuments Commission.
So you send the flag over.
Yes.
They fly it over the cemetery, repackage it, and send it back to you.
And they have a certificate saying that certifies that this flag was flown over this cemetery in appreciation of the service of so-and-so.
Oh, okay.
And then they have the date and superintendent's
signature. Very personalized,
signature. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You can't...
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, and you can't order these online. Yeah, this, it has to go through a person-to-person type project.
Outstanding. So we will put contact information on the website, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yep.
Make it real easy. People can go on, read about the project. And I do hope you do go to the site, because we've got a whole host of pictures. We've got a really wonderful video and a lot of links to some sponsors of this particular program and some just great folks. Matera,
well,
Vineyards.
We've got a video on there shows pictures of all the cemeteries, the American cemeteries in all the different towns and countries, and the number of Americans who are buried there. And it's very...
stunning.
Yeah, it's...
we'll play the music a little bit later in the hour. You'll hear it in the background. All right, so what haven't we talked about yet besides everything? The time goes shooting past. Where are we now on our travels, folks?
You're going to talk to us a little bit about the Ardennes and some folks you met over there, British couple. That
right. On my first visit to the Ardennes Cemetery, which is on the outer fringe of where the Battle of the Bulge took place in Belgium, is the Ardennes Cemetery. First met Hans Hooker there, and he took us around. And on the way out, there's a couple came in. A gentleman was dressed very nattily with coat and tie. And this is in September. There's no special occasion. And Hans introduced us to the couple. I can't remember their names. But they were a British couple. He was an RAF Spitfire pilot, and she was an RAF nurse. And they had hosted an American flyer in her home in England. And he was shot down, killed in battle, and buried there at the Ardennes Cemetery. Well, they came over. It's not a quick trip, you know, from England over to the Ardennes. And they're just come over to decorate his grave on his birthday. And that's the kind of dedication that these folks have. We do have a large cemetery in World War II cemetery in Cambridge and in England, and also another one in Brookwood, which is a World War I. And I believe that's the smallest of all the cemeteries in the ABMC. I think about 400, 450. I don't have my chart, so I'm trying to remember what the
numbers
are.
You didn't bring that?
Yeah, no.
I can't believe that over there. You don't have a chart of that.
In fact, I left my notes on my printer before I walked out the door. So I'm doing this from memory.
Yeah.
This
from what amazed me was after watching that video, the numbers. I think we tend to forget how many soldiers we lost during World War II. 3,000 at one, 4,000, 10,000, 9,000. And when you see the pictures and the condition of those cemeteries, which, I mean, they have every blade of grass cut, every stone polished. It's incredible. But when you watch that video, it really hits home. It really does.
Yeah, they take great care. And it's hard. The one in the Ardennes is a little difficult to find, but it's not that far from the city of Bastogne, which was, you know, a photo there of a tank in McCall Square where our flag flies every day. And
just a big giant tank right in the middle of the square.
Right. And look at it closely, you'll see the hole in the back of it where a rocket went into it. The biggest attraction is just outside of town, the Martisan Memorial, which was dedicated to the sacrifice of all the American troops that lost their lives by the Belgians. Another thing that was not well known is that when the war broke out, of course, most of our guys were in Paris relaxing because they thought the war was almost over. They got into the front, and they went to the battlefront, and the difference was the Germans were all prepared for winter with winter clothing. Our guys were not. The Germans had, you know, their snow, their white-colored uniforms. We had not. What I heard that the Belgians did in the whole area is they gathered all their white sheets, as many blankets as they could gather, and they gave them to our guys so they could use white to camouflage themselves during the battle. And there was a very very close bond between the Belgians and the Americans in that. There's a lot of sacrifices on both sides. So that's one reason our flag flies there, and also at the Martisan Memorial, which is just massive. They have a new museum out there which takes a lot of time to go through, couple, at least 2 or 3 hours to go through a brand new museum out there. But yeah, they would not, they have a restaurant called Nuts, in honor of General McAuliffe.
Yep.
And there's actually another favorite sign of ours. There's a Hotel Melba, which my wife's name is Melba, and so we take that picture all the time, too.
There you go. She's got her own special hotel.
That's right. It's Best Western.
What about, talk to us about Luxembourg.
The Luxembourg American Cemetery. After Lee was an assistant in Normandy, he was promoted and put in charge of the Luxembourg American Cemetery. We have over, I think it's 5,400, just over 5,500 men buried there. It is the only cemetery in Luxembourg, and it's also where General Patton's buried. Mm. Now, there's a story that Lee told me about this. General Patton is the only general in these cemeteries who has his own separate area by himself. It looks like he's commanding the troops. There's a photo in there which shows one grave separate from all the rest of them. That's Luxembourg.
Interesting.
As the story goes, there was an argument that was back and forth between the American government and the Luxembourg royalty. They wanted him, the Luxembourgers wanted him to have a place of honor. The Americans said, no, he's going to be buried like General Roosevelt and the other generals with the troops. He says, no, we want him to have a place of honor. And they went back and forth. Finally, the Luxembourgers said, I know you'll probably send me an email if I'm wrong, that we want him to have a place of honor. If you're not going to honor him in your cemetery, then we are going to bury him in the Royal Cemetery. So that's why General Patton has his place of honor. Mm. Now, also, there are no next of kin buried there, you know, like in Arlington. One morning, Lee went out and noticed there was some stuff on the ground out of the cemetery. They didn't know what it was. And they found out that Mrs. Patton had died recently and she'd been cremated. So you just put two and two together and try to figure it out.
Yeah, we might be able to figure that out. Let's see. Before we go to our next story, let's take a really quick break. We'll actually try to stay on schedule. We'll give that up right after this break, but just for now. You're listening to We the People Radio. We are honoring our veterans and our fallen on Memorial Day. Real Memorial Day.
Real Memorial Day.
Yeah. Actually, it's the day after, but close enough. Closer than last weekend. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
He was a famous trumpet man from our Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was a top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blown reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he could not jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next year the cap went out and drafted the band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State, KCNR.
Hi, you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. This is We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, or on the phone, 530-605-4567. We have with us President Dan Christensen of the Special Forces Association, Chapter 89. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Super. What do you have to tell folks about your chapter?
Well, I just want to let everybody know that we are here in the Redding and Northern California area. We're also in the Southern Oregon and Northern Nevada regions. We're most active in Redding, Reno, and Eureka areas. We are a memorial chapter. We're named after Alan C. Johnson. Sergeant Johnson was a Special Forces medic killed in Afghanistan on a combat patrol in 2005. We have several missions. First, we are a service organization supporting various charities, a scholarship in for Los Molinos High School. which is where our namesake graduated from. We're also a social group. We have quarterly meetings, a lot of formal, informal gatherings, Oktoberfest, Christmas party, that sort of thing. Most of our members were in special forces. Some served during the Vietnam War, some during the first Gulf War, such as myself, and others in the current war on terror. A few of our members still serve overseas. Some of our members are highly decorated combat veterans, and some never left the USA. A few of our members, veterans, served in units that were associated with special forces, such as the Brownwater Navy or Task Force 160 or Air Force PJs. We are an Army Special Forces chapter, but we welcome other special operations folks looking for a local veterans group. People that served in special operations tend to be cut from the same cloth, and we get along with them pretty well. Mostly we're a small band of brothers, becoming friends, sharing stories, and reminding ourselves of who we are and where we came from. And we can be reached on Facebook by looking up Special Forces Chapter 89 or emailing sfchapter89@gmail.com. And if you're a current or former member of Special Operations, we'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, Dan. We'll post your stuff on our website.
That'd be great.
We appreciate it. Thanks for your service.
Thank you very much.
I know. Welcome to the speediest radio program ever. You know, the thing that's great about We the People Radio is sometimes we make your blood pressure go up. But then days like today, we just, you know, give you information. We have our little walking history book here, Mr. Ken Delfino, all-around good guy, Vietnam veteran. And really, really an expert on all this. Normandy, you should see the pictures and all that. I'm going to do my best to get you some live local gigs here so that you can actually show all these pictures, because radio just is not helpful with the photos. You can, however, go to the website. We've posted a chunk of them, and there's a wonderful video on there as well. So we hope you'll take a look at that. All right, where are we headed next on our tour?
Flanders Field.
A lot of us, my generation, we grew up, memorizing the poem Flanders
yes.
Field, the poppies blow, and we have a cemetery. It's a World War One cemetery, and the first time I visited there, I met the superintendent Tom Cavanis, who's actually from born in Auburn and raised in Tahoe Vista. So he's local California. Matter of fact, there's another Californian who's the assistant superintendent at Pinal, Shane Williams, who's from Roseville, former Air Force gentleman. Met him last summer. But with Flanders, it's a small World War One cemetery, and it's in a kind of like a high-tech area in the town of Waregem, Belgium, which isn't that far from the above the French border. And we have, don't forget the number we have buried there, but I've stopped there several times. The second to last time I was there was like 29 degrees, and there was ice all over the ground. But it's as far as that area goes, on this last trip, we usually stay in the town of Ypres, the Belgians call it, and the French call it Ypres, Y-P-R-E-S. There were three or four major battles there where the town was pretty much demolished. Mm-hmm. And see some of the photos, and today it's a beautiful, beautiful city. They've restored the church, the cloth factory, etc. That's where I got my first taste of really good Belgian chocolate by Leonidas. But on this last trip, I was reading something, and I wasn't aware of that just outside of town, there's a place called the Essex Farm Cemetery. And in that area, a lot of the farmers have given up their land for the British Empire soldiers who were killed during World War One. And so, and they maintain those cemeteries, which is, comes under the jurisdiction of the British Commonwealth, Graves Commonwealth, I think it's called. In Essex Farm Cemeteries were then-Captain John McCrae penned the words in Flanders Field. So I was able to stand on that ground, and I was on the Yser, I think it's called the Yser-Ypres Canal, really beautiful, and that's also where the youngest soldier in the British Empire is buried. I think he's 15 years old. He's buried there. I mean, these guys are serious about defending their countries. But in the town of Ypres itself, is a big memorial, and I forgot to put the website on this, called the Menin Gate, M-E-N-I-N. It's between Ypres and the town of Menin. It's a huge, about, a three-story structure. It's like a gate into the city, into the main entrance of Ypres. And on this building are carved over 58,000 names of the British Empire missing in action.
Wow, that's just missing.
58,000 just missing.
Wow.
And then you look at it, and then you realize, you keep forgetting how big the British Empire was. You got names there from Nepal, South Africa, mm-hmm. you know, all these countries, and Europe and South Africa and the far Pacific.
Well, back in those days, they didn't really have a good system for keeping track of their soldiers, like with dog tags and so forth, did they?
I think they did have dog tags, but it was a different kind of a battle. That, I mean, bodies were just literally destroyed,
right?
You know, with all the mud and all the poison gases and stuff they used, they don't want to go in those areas. I was fortunate to get involved in the Kiwanis Project, helping a Kiwanis Club. They wanted to honor a cavalryman, Corporal William Leggett, who died in a cavalry battle, in a little town of Galui, which is just over the French border. And so we got that all fixed up, and it was really neat to see a project from its infancy to be finally developed. And I saw the statue that's on those grounds there. But I got a great education from the Belgians, and they also honor everything in the whole area, and that's how I found out about the farms, that the farmers giving up their land as a thank you to the families of the soldiers who are laid resting on their sites.
Mm.
But every night at the Menin Gate, there's what's called a last post. It's a British ceremony where at 7:45 p.m. they close off the Menin Gate, and then people start coming out. You talked about earlier about the children coming out and the message being passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I've gone to one of these last posts, I've seen little ones in tow. The adults bring out their kids. The next generation bring out their kids. And it's being passed down even to the five-year-olds.
So the respect for the fallen isn't an old people's club.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's crowded. I mean, I was there one night, and there was no reason, special evening. There were like 500 people there. And it's a short ceremony, about 45 minutes to an hour, and they play a bugle. It'll all be on the website if you look at the Menin Gate or the last post.
So it is truly...
I will post that now.
Something that they pass down through their generations to keep the memory of what happened there alive. I mean,
correct.
That's their history as well.
That's right.
I mean, that's really fantastic. Largest cemetery in Europe.
The largest one is the Meuse-Argonne, which is northern France near the Belgian border.
And is this American cemetery?
U.S. Yeah, these are all U.S. cemeteries I'm focusing on. Over 14,000 buried there. I don't remember the name of the wall, the missing. The last time I was there was in conjunction with the dedication of the Sergeant York Memorial. A gentleman, Colonel Doug Mastriano, who's still active duty, he'd been working on a project for 6 years trying to find the exact spot where York earned his Medal of Honor. And finally, over they got the forensic evidence. They found the casings from the .45 automatic that York used when he finished off the last Germans and tried to charge them. And so there's a memorial there now there, which is partly sponsored by our Kiwanis Kalinava district and five other sponsors in that site. When the farmer found out about the land and what took place on that land, he ended up giving the York family that land in honor of what took place during that battle. And Doug's son, Josiah, earned his Eagle Scout by hacking out a path and creating the pathway and putting signage, etc., throughout this entire area, which it's about a mile walk where everything took place. So it's a hard place to find. The little village of Chatel Shahri has 160 people. They have an 11-member council.
Oh, boy.
But it's a town.
But still, even with those small numbers, they don't forget.
No.
They will not forget what happened there, and they're going to keep that memory alive.
Exactly. I was able to meet Sergeant York's son, George, his grandson, Gerald, and his great-granddaughter, Deborah. They were there for that ceremony. But on the next day, I heard about I was that close to Meuse-Argonne, and I had not seen Mr. Rivers since he left Normandy. So I went over to visit, and we touched bases, and actually Phil was involved in the next day with the with the York ceremony. He was actively involved in that.
And so we have that posted on here.
Oh, okay.
So there's a link to that, and I just posted the ceremony that you were talking about before.
Oh, great.
On the gate. I'm over here posting, so my lips aren't working. My lips are on break while you boys talk.
Okay.
All right. So we're let's go one more location, and we're calling Pete back.
Oh, okay. Wall.
Bill is our tour guide.
Missing.
Oh, that was the one at Normandy. Yeah, we covered that. It's okay. Pretty impressive. Yeah.
All right. Man, you got some French names here. I can't.
Okay. This is like a menu item. Pick number, 11.
The bridge.
With fries.
The Lafayette Bridge.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Lafayette.
Yes. Okay, Lafayette.
Yesterday.
It's a little village, actually a commune, mm-hmm. of about four or five buildings, which is now a B&B. But that is, if you all recall, the last scene of Saving Private Ryan, where Tom Hanks died.
Right.
There is no town there. And you can, I don't know if you have those photos on a website, on the site, but there's no town there because the Germans had flooded all those fields across the river. On that site is a huge statue of a paratrooper kind of leaning on his knee, looking at the German positions. It's called Iron Mike, and that was dedicated recently, I think 97, that was dedicated. And there's a French and U.S. flag there. That's the fifth place in that area where our flag flies every day. And then down the road, about a mile and a half, is the village of Amfreville, which was liberated by another. Now, that bridge, both sides needed that bridge. You can see that's not a very wide bridge. We needed it to counterattack. The Germans needed it to counterattack. We needed it to break out. Mm-hmm. So the bridge wasn't destroyed. But there was a site on there, and I forget the name of the site, where four or six paratroopers just kept blowing up German tanks on that road, which caused problems for the Germans until we were able to break out.
Mm. That's so much history there.
Yeah, that's allegedly where they found Private Ryan, one of the Nine Island Boys, which is really is still, I don't know, I can't find proof of that he was at that actual site.
Interesting.
He was a paratrooper, but I can't find that he was there.
We have lots of... lots of history with bridges and locations, and the one we were talking about last hour that I could not think of, the bridge where they made the deal, nobody blow up the bridge because we all need it, so we're just going to, that's off limits, is the Ponte Vecchio in Florence.
It's really
famous, and it still has the same old shops. They were the original goldsmiths and all that. They were the merchants, and all these shops, you should go look at the picture if you haven't ever seen it before. The shops hang out over the river. It really, it's kind of spooky. Actually, we went in some of those shops, and you look out the window, and you think, mm-hmm. Well, and this has been here since when?
Well, if you go there to visit those shops, there's also an American cemetery there in Florence. That's one of two in Italy. The other one's down in Sicily, outside Rome.
Very good. Well, we made arrangements, back in the day, and everybody honored them. What a novel idea. Yeah. All right. So we need to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back with you. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online. Especially today for today's program, WeThePeopleRadio.us has a ton of information, links, and photos.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State, KCNR.
Hi, here at We the People Radio today, we have some special sponsors and supporters and information for you. And our information of the moment here is Pete Horton from the Kiwanis Cal Neva Foundation. Hiya, Pete.
Hi, Aaron. Thanks. Pediatric trauma kills more kids in the U.S. every year than any other cause. And recognizing the need for education and training in the areas of pediatric trauma and injury prevention, the Kiwanis Cal Neva Foundation established our pediatric trauma program together with the Kiwanis Clubs of California, Nevada, and Hawaii.
The mission of our program is to develop local projects which will reduce the number of children who are killed or injured as a result of trauma by providing training, community outreach, and education to children and families living in our communities. In addition to our focus on pediatric trauma, the Foundation supports the Kiwanis family through grants which assist Kiwanis clubs to meet their own community needs, along with programs which encourage and train young leaders. We directly support programs such as the Kiwanis Family House in Sacramento, as well as Kiwanis District programs such as the Sergeant York Memorial. More information about the Foundation can be found at www.cnhfoundation.org.
Thanks, Pete. Big supporters of Kiwanis. Actually, 50% of the people in this room are past presidents. Go figure.
We appreciate that, Aaron. Thank you so much.
And Ken's giving us two bits here. Need Bob to turn on his microphone. There we go.
Pete, I escorted Pete his first visit to Belleau Wood. Pete, can you give us your opinion of your first visit to Belleau?
Oh, you know what? Let's come back on. Let's run our music and come back in. Pete, can you hang with us for a minute?
I can.
Absolutely. Here you go. Welcome back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We have with us Ken Delfino, all-around good guy, Vietnam veteran, and basically an expert on all this. Okay, he's way more expert than we are. Don't shake your head over there, Mr. Delfino, on Normandy. We are celebrating Memorial Day the real way with a tribute to our fallen. With us on the phone, we have Pete Horton with us from the Kiwanis Cal Neva Foundation, and he's been giving us some information on the breaks, but he and Ken have been on this mission of flying the flags over the cemeteries, and they have a story to tell us.
I took Pete to his first visit to Belleau, and to Belleau Wood, which is the only place where the Marines fought in World War I for 4 months from June to November of 1918. Pete, I'd like to get your opinions on how you felt when you walked those grounds, being a former Marine.
That's hard to put into words, Ken. It really is. But, you know, the Marine Corps is known for its esprit de corps, and when you go to boot camp, you learn about Belleau Wood and some of the places that are really sacred to the Marine Corps. And, of course, hearing about them and actually stepping onto that ground, going to the flagpole with you, flying a flag, looking at the trenches that went up and the Marines fought from in 1918, I can't really put that into words. And then, of course, the Einmarn Cemetery, which is adjacent to Belleau Wood, where I believe about 1,500 Marines were laid to rest. It was one of the more moving experiences of my lifetime, and Diane and I reflect about that all the time. We have some remembrances here in my office from the superintendent that you and I met together, Ken. So it's always with me, and it will always be with me until I'm gone from this world.
And I just want to add that any former Marine who has to go to Paris has no excuse for not making that trip out there, because it's only an hour and 10 minutes. So if you get lost, no more than 2 hours away from Charles de Gaulle Airport to the east, it's very easy to get to. It's very moving, and there's also nearby the Bulldog Fountain, from which every Marine is supposed to take a drink. Yeah, they don't have EPA. You don't have to worry about the EPA crap over there.
Gosh, isn't that awesome?
So you can just drink from that, and it's supposed to rejuvenate them. So it's just spirit, you know, type thing.
Yeah.
Pete had a drink from it. Lieutenant Colonel Chambers, who went with us on another trip, drank from that. So, you know, hopefully they'll have a spring in their step from that. But it's on private property, but it's open to all former Marines. The owners don't mind that they go in there and take a drink.
That's fabulous.
I'm going to make two comments, if I can, Ken. Number one, there's no such thing as a former Marine. You know that.
I was going to say that.
and you know, Number two, it is an easy drive from Paris, and it is easy to find. Just don't follow Ken's directions. Call me. I'll give you directions.
Oh, so there's more to this story.
Well, slightly edited.
So maybe this is why my coworker was falling down in bunkers and whatever all they were doing. That's funny. It all starts with the navigator, doesn't it?
Yeah, and one last thing. Also, our Caliniva Foundation was formed based on an emergency in Siskiyou County on the when the Klamath River flooded in 1965. Our then Governor Charles Dunlap needed a fast way to raise money to help those folks in that area, and so that's our roots is in Siskiyou County.
Interesting.
50 years ago.
That's fabulous.
Well, thanks for that.
Well, we really appreciate you popping in and giving us informational minutes, and we thank you for your service, and we know that there are no former Marines. There are just Marines.
Well, it's a pleasure. I thank you for having me this afternoon, and it's always a pleasure to be able to embarrass Ken anytime.
Thanks, Pete. We appreciate you stepping
thanks
in to
so
do
much.
That.
Okay, bye-bye.
Is he off the air? I get last word.
Yeah, go ahead. Take a shot at him.
Convention's coming up, Pete.
That's funny. Yeah, mute the guy on the phone and take him out.
There you go. Hey, Ken, before we run out of time, I know there was a couple of guys you wanted to, or a couple of stories you wanted to retell.
The battle of the complicated place with a short-sounding name spelled long starts with a G.
Well, there are two stories, one very sad one and one extremely powerful. The Battle of Grenes, the town Graigne, is in the Normandy area. The village was, in the first days, a lot of our paratroopers landed there, about 170 or so landed, but they were from different units, mostly the 82nd Airborne. But they landed in this area and trying to regroup. So they go into this village and they talk with the mayor, and the mayor said, "Yes, we'll host you here." And a German patrol was shot at, was ambushed, and the Germans were killed. And so then that led to the town coming under siege. To make a long story short, the Americans were badly outnumbered by a SS Panzered Grenadier Division. But our guys held off as long as they could because they were running low on ammunition, had no resupply area. After the Germans took over the town, they killed 31 of our guys, including prisoners, and 36 of the villagers, including children, nuns, and a priest. No qualms, and they burned down the town. So that massacre, a lot of people don't know about this area. My friend Lee took us to that site, and so that is now one of the places where I don't think the tour buses go unless you're on a private tour. So people should be made aware of that battle that took place at that place.
Say the name again.
Grenes, Graigne.
Now, are there markers and memorials there?
You know, in France, you don't find a big advertising billboards that you'll see in America.
Right.
Beach Boy landing, souvenirs, all this kind of stuff. People have to know, they know where they're going.
Right.
And so, because they don't want to diminish the sacrifice
right.
by commercializing it.
And well, no, what a novel idea.
You won't find souvenirs at this place.
No, but is there a memorial built there?
Yes, there is. There's a plaque on there honoring mm-hmm. all those, all the 60 plus people who were massacred by the Nazis that day. In one case, they had some of the soldiers degraze, and then they put the dead in there, and then the Germans shot the Americans and just covered them up right on that. Mm-hmm. So that took place there. But on another part of that area, not that far away, is a little village of Angouville-au-Plan. In this town, the village was, the battle was going back and forth. There was a church right in the middle of the town. And one of the battles, two of the medics, Kenneth Morin and Robert Wright, were taken wounded. They confiscated the church, decided that's going to be their medical station. So they took the wounded off the battlefield into this church. And they took care of them. Then there's some German soldiers. They took German soldiers, and they took care of the Germans as well. So the battle went back and forth, and finally one German officer went in to check to see if anybody was in there. They saw the two American medics working on prisoners, but there were prisoners of both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't figure out what was going on, and they... But unbeknownst to the Americans, there were two snipers up in the belfry of the church.
Oh.
So they witnessed what was going on. And they came down and told the German officer. So apparently a truce was called, and they said this area was off limits, and it was to everybody from both sides wounded go in here. And Moore and Wright took care of the prisoners, of the wounded on both sides. They were commemorated. There's a memorial there, and I think both soldiers received the Silver Star for their actions. And to this day, a very small village, a lady across the street has a key to the church. If you want it, you come in after hours. The last time we were there, they were fixing the roof, but there's a beautiful window that DHL paid for. When you go to the side, you'll see a window that DHL paid for commemorating the landing. One of the pews still has blood on the seats. They're not taking that pew out. That's staying in there. And there's a marker. There's a stone in there. It's marked 1769, so I don't know if that's when that church was built or not. There's no notation of that. So there's two contrasting stories about two. You have the Nazis, and then the other one was a German officer, not an SS trooper.
Right.
So there's what the differences were between them.
Wow.
And then that's not on the stop either of the tour buses that I don't believe. We've never seen one.
So that's why, in your case, going back over and over has been a huge advantage, because you learn one more thing, mm-hmm. and then go back and meet some other people and one more thing.
Well, I got great teachers there with Lee and Annie. They just take us these sites, and he said, I have another one for you to check out the next time you come.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, we need to take one more quick break, and we've got something really great planned for you at the end of the hour, so... It's only a few minutes away, but don't go away. It'll be awesome. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Today's show has a ton of information on the webpage. Please send it to your friends and family and let them experience it.
In May of 1941, the war had just begun. The Germans had the biggest ship that had the biggest guns. The Bismarck was the fastest ship that ever sailed the sea. On her decks were guns as big as steers and shells as big as trees. Out of the cold and foggy night came the British ship, the Hood. And every British seaman, he knew and understood. They had to sink the Bismarck, the terror of the sea. Stop those guns as big as steers and those shells as big as trees. We find the German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us.
He hit the decks a-running, boys, and spin those guns around.
When we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460, KCNR.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Absolutely. Well said. Well sung, I should say. That is just a great version of that. So we're celebrating Memorial Day weekend in the way it should be celebrated, remembering our fallen and speaking with veterans. So you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And we've got a ton of information. I hope you send this show to your friends and family. It's educational and just a nice break from our typical politics, although we did get a shot in at the EPA, so it wasn't a total loss.
You caught that.
It's just wrong if we let them all slide. You know, we got to get something in there. Okay, so in our we had way more stuff to do today than we had time to do it. But what did we miss? What did we miss, Ken?
Do we have time to talk about Reed Allen and John Hunter? Or do you
Actually, well, I'm saying sure. I don't know the story.
Actually, these are the World War II.
Yeah, I don't know.
These are some of the gentlemen that I've done this project for. Reed Allen was one of our district governors during World War II. He was on a subchaser in the South Pacific. He's just strong as ever. Just you know, goes around. Everybody in our district loves him. And I had an opportunity to be able to surprise him. He was a Navy veteran, so I had a flag flown over the USS Arizona and presented it to him. It's really so rewarding to be able to surprise people with this thing. And that's the whole thing, folks. If you want to do this for somebody, there's a lot of collusion that needs to be done, to pull this off. And it's so rewarding, especially when they have no idea of what's coming, but the whole family knows what's coming. So we did that in front of another Kiwanis function, and he's a tough guy, but he's very patriotic, and it really affected him when he got that flag, because he was in the Pacific at the time World War II broke out.
Okay.
Second person on there, Bob Gibbons, a very dear person. Bob was my governor. He was my leader in 1992-93. And he named his team the Pathfinders. We all have team names
in Kiwanis.
And he named ourselves the Pathfinders. And I knew what the Pathfinders were, but I didn't realize that he was one. Bob was one of Bill Donovan's OSS boys before it became CIA. He was working with a group in St. Mary Glees in that area. His code name was number 33 because on the jump day, he was a 33rd. He's counted 33, and he's out the plane. That's technology in those days.
Yeah, no kidding.
So he met with his in January of 44. He met with his counterparts, and then he came back. And then sometime in May, he was on another mission up in northern France. And apparently, there was an accident, or the plane was shot, and it crash landed on arrival back in England. And subsequently, he was not able to make that jump. Well, I found out all this stuff. And was able to surprise him with a flag that we had flown over the village of St. Mary Glees. And it was nobody in Kiwanis in the organization knew that he was getting this. His family was in on it. And it was just really kind of neat because his daughter said that this is the first time they ever seen him cry.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, the mayor signed a letter, beautiful stationery.
Yeah, what a great feeling to be able to give somebody something that means so much to them.
Right, and you're one of my influences for doing this project as well. You know, I have a lot to say. I know this is going to Philadelphia. In August 68, I was an unintended guest of the Philadelphia Naval Hospital, where I spent until December 30th of that year. During my time there, I still remember all the friendship and the help that the citizens of Philadelphia gave me, a sailor who was unable to walk at the time. The Penn National Bank came in. I still remember when they all came in, 3-something in the afternoon on a Friday, and all of a sudden they broke out into joy to the world. And cookies, everything. The Ford Motor Company took us out to a show and dinner at the in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. The Sunoco family, the gals, the daughters, and their friends came out and picked us all up. We had a free invitation to a Christmas Eve party at their huge mansion. I didn't get to go because I had tickets to a hockey game, and I'm being an avid hockey fan. The Oakland Seals were playing, so I understand I missed a hell of a party. I just want to close this out with a speech. In the movie about the Battle of the Bulge, on Christmas Day morning, the chaplain had a reading. It said, was this trip necessary? I modified it a little bit. It goes like this. The facts are that none of us wanted that war, but the Nazis. A great many people tried to deal with them before we got involved, but many of them died. After thousands more died, there was no other reason but to fight. There was a great lesson in this, and those of us who learned it the hard way are not going to forget it. We must never again let any force dedicated to a super race, super idea, or super anything become strong enough to impose itself upon a free world. We must be smart enough and tough enough in the beginning to put out the fire before it starts spreading? So my answer to that question is yes, this trip was necessary. As time goes by, a lot of people are going to forget, but we won't. And don't anyone get away with telling you that you are a sucker for fighting the war against tyranny. I want to personally add, at this time, the oppressed we serve the free. My brothers in Vietnam, those who picked up the torch and served in Panama, Afghanistan, Iraq, and other places around the world that are not mentioned. The people there may not have understood our mission, but in time, either they did or they will. I am proud to see that in the Vietnamese students that I have worked with in key clubs, the young Vietnamese adults I've seen succeed coming here with nothing, but working their skin and bone, learning our language, and making hard work and becoming taxpayers and now even serving in our government. So, remember every one of you out there in uniform, all of you who have worn it. We're together, there's more of us that care about this country deeply. And for as long as I'm alive, I'll continue this project of honoring their memory. But thank you, Aaron and Bill, for giving me the time to do this on your program.
It was our great honor to have you. What a wonderful tribute to our servicemen and women who have gone before us, gave the ultimate sacrifice.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks a million. We'll just leave you with this great, great music for the end of the program. This comes from where, Ken? This is John Williams.
John Williams from Saving Private Ryan.
Fantastic piece, and the video that has this music is also online on the website. Join us there for follow-up pictures and links from the program, WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be back next week with more great information.
This has been our special salute to the veterans on We the People. You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.